Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
And that is the official theme music of the Burbank Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes, this is a podcast about movies.
And Carly Simon.
And Carly Simon. You are Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
Yes. Oh, you.
Yeah. You never get this right.
You're Alonzo Duralde of TheRap.com, lead film critic for TheRap.com, and lead film critic for What the... And you are...
It's a team effort.
A film critic for What the Flick. Well, for me, I think of you as the most important member of What the Flick.
That's sweet.
I'm the one who... When I see you on camera, you're the only one whose hair I'm judging.
Ah, well, Christy will be glad to hear that.
You're the only one. You're the only one who's I'm looking at, going, okay, we got to fix the thing. Don't wear that shirt on camera anymore. And it's weird looking on you on the camera. It looks like poop, brown poop on you.
Okay, that was one shirt, and I did stop wearing it.
You did, and that was because of me.
Yes,
you stopped wearing it because of me.
Thanks so much. And we are both contributors to...
I'm your stylist.
You are. We are both contributors to linoleum-knife.com.
No, we're not both contributors to linoleum-knife.com. We're the owners and editors-in-chief of linoleum-knife.com.
We are the staff of linoleum-knife.com. I thought contributor sounded better. Whatever. It's our thing.
No, we're not contributors. We're contributors to movies.com and the rap.
Okay, fine.
We boss... at linoleum-knife.com.
It is our baby. And you can go there for past episodes and links to our work elsewhere and original stories and all kinds of stuff.
The original stuff is slowly coming along.
Yes, at some point, Dave will write some.
Yes, you're right. And then you have already done that, and I have not. And that is because I can't get into WordPress. Which our website guy is trying to help me with. It's not my fault. WordPress keeps...
Oh, no, it's never your fault.
WordPress keeps kicking me out of WordPress, and we're trying to get that settled. You have no WordPress problems.
Not yet.
Smoothly glide through the WordPress process. I do not. It keeps dumping me every time I get in, and I have not been able to write a single thing until our awesome web guy, Andy... figures out what the deal is with me and WordPress and they don't like me.
I've actually been having the WordPress sort of baptism by fire because the Wrap uses it now too. They just switched to an exciting new format. I don't know if you've been to therap.com lately and seen the exciting new format. But
you should go there.
It's gorgeous. But anyway, that new format required a change of CMS, and so now we're using WordPress. And this is really fascinating, I'm sure, to anyone who's listening. So we'll press on.
They want to know about our lives.
Well, then
they're here to learn they're here to learn of the cinema and of us.
Why don't...
If we weren't us, we would just be any other movie podcast.
I suppose so. You are correct, sir.
And do you really want to listen to any other movie podcast that isn't hosted by us? No.
Actually, there was some interesting stuff this week. Well, when we talk about Salinger later, I'm going to bring up some things that were said on the B-Movies podcast. But I was listening to...
Oh, well, yeah, you should listen to them, obviously.
I was listening to Team Jack, which is not exclusively a movies podcast.
They're the not-homo version of us, I guess. Well, no, I don't even think they're that.
No,
actually,
no,
now that I'm thinking
just, they're
about
our
it.
Bros. But I was listening to Team Jack, a show that you and I have been on, and Jack Morrissey raised a really interesting point that I hadn't thought about that much, which was that Avatar is...
You're
the...
You're super loud in my ears.
Really?
Because my headphones are turned up real high.
Maybe
or
that's
what?
It, because I feel like my levels are... I'm maybe even a little
look
low.
Look at our major level over there. Are we jacking up into the red or anything?
No, not at all. To the contrary.
Okay, it's just my headphones.
I feel like I'm under-delivering.
My headphones are up too high. Well.
Anyway, yes, that's what it is. So Jack was talking about the fact that, you know, Avatar, highest grossing movie of all time, no one ever talks about it. Nobody references that movie. Mm-hmm. It has not entered the culture in a significant way.
No.
There are no metaphors based on it, you know. I mean, when Titanic became huge, things like King of the World, you know, or Heart of the Ocean kind of right. entered into the vernacular. Yes. People reference that movie. Can you even name a character from Avatar?
Bill Paxton became a sex symbol.
Absolutely. We all remember what we were when that happened.
Gloria, the old lady.
Gloria Stewart.
Became a sex symbol.
But I remember that the blue people in Avatar are named the Na'vi, but I cannot nope. name a single character if you pointed a gun at my head right now.
Michelle Rodriguez.
That's not a character.
Yeah, she was a character.
She's an actress in the film. It's funny, when I asked somebody about this yesterday, and they said Zoe Saldana, so same thing. It's not what I'm talking about.
Look, if Michelle Rodriguez is in a movie...
She is playing Michelle Rodriguez.
She's playing Michelle Rodriguez.
Except when she is Blood Rain.
No, I'd say that's also her. Yeah. And that's... I mean, if anything, that movie's contribution to the culture is that we will always have Michelle Rodriguez. She won't disappear or fade away now.
Because of Avatar?
Yeah, because she's like in the biggest movie ever.
Right, true.
So that means she always will have a, you know, career.
Hmm.
That doesn't make any sense, what I just
no,
said.
No, not really.
I'm just wishing it to be true.
Well, yes. You're using the secret to manifest
I love her so much.
I think the thing that will immortalize Michelle Rodriguez is her two fights with Gina Carano mm-hmm. in Fast 6. But
which apparently I mistakenly... called Lesbian Christmas, and then someone told me that Gina Carano not a lesbian.
Well,
which I'm skeptical of, but I'm
assuming she's.
I hear she's not.
Let's say for a moment that Gina Carano is not a lesbian.
She's rumored not to be a lesbian.
I bet you that she has a lesbian fan base all the same.
Oh yeah, no, I guarantee you that.
So
because I go to afterellen.com. I know.
All right,
her and the Pretty Little Liars, boy, it's all about them. On After Ellen.
Now, are they still After Ellen? Because After Elton changed to The Backlot.
They are still After Ellen. They didn't give up the faith.
Okay.
On Ellen.
Maybe After Elton just felt like too much of an afterthought of After Ellen. I don't know. But they're TheBackLot.com now, if you haven't been there lately. Which you should go, if only to check out Louis Vertel's
Louis Vertel.
Weekly Weeklings video. Which
our buddy
hilarious.
Louis Vertel. Where did we start talking about this? Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, tell the
I forget now what we were talking about. Avatar.
Yes.
And why did we start talking about Avatar?
Because they talked about it on Team Jack, and I just thought that was an interesting thing that this movie that everybody saw and that was a huge, huge hit.
No one cares about.
No one cares about because it is not about the characters or the plot. People went to look at it, you know. It's like trying to remember the names of the characters in Koyaanisqatsi.
Could
it
be possibly because it's all digital and there's nothing to...
Nothing tangible to
nothing
walk away from?
Nothing tangible to feel and take with you?
I don't know. I mean, but then,
is there an aesthetic issue going
but
on
but
here?
Then,
where
but then Finding Nemo wouldn't have had resonance, you know?
True.
I think it's the writing. I think it's, you know, I think Cameron's Titanic writing was sort of fun, old-fashioned romantic swill.
Yes.
But, you know, but done, you know, efficaciously, if not well.
Uh-huh.
But I think Avatar just, you know... Like, think about Star Wars. Think about, if you talk about, you know, if you're in some life situation and you make some reference to, ugh, I got to hit that ventilator, that air shaft to knock out the Death Star or something like that. Like, people know what you mean.
It's like when you say, I got a motor if I'm going to make that funeral.
Yeah, or these are not the droids you're looking for.
Which is not from Star Wars.
No.
It's from my Star Wars.
But nobody references Avatar ever, so I don't know. That was kind of interesting. The other funny thing that I was talking about with people yesterday. Somebody was talking about the Miley Cyrus, you know, the twerking thing, because that won't ever go away.
I miss talking about her.
Yes, I know.
It seems so relevant. It seems so relevant about 12 days ago.
Anyway,
now,
so because you know the number involved.
I miss those times.
The number involved all those people in teddy bear costumes. He said it reminded him of the scene with Sean Connery in The Avengers.
Yes.
The one with Ehrman and Ralph Fiennes.
More people reference that than they reference Avatar.
Exactly. And I said, well, you know, now that there's... Because the Avengers, you know, the Joss Whedon movie was such a hit, that we should now have to refer to the old one as Lee Daniels, the Avengers.
I agree.
Just so we don't get them confused. So, like, now when
eventually, he's going to have some people in teddy bear costumes in one of his actual movies.
Yeah, it's inevitable. So, like, when Ron Howard's Rush comes out this month, we will have to refer to the Jennifer Jason Leigh, Jason Patrick Rush from 1991 as Lee Daniels Rush. Oh.
Yes.
Just to keep it clear. And yeah. However, let it be clear that the David Cronenberg crash is Crash, and the Oscar-winning one is Lee Daniels' Crash.
So is Lee Daniels the one that makes the lesser movie? The earlier movie?
I think usually it's the earlier movie, but in the case of Crash, Cronenberg owns that stuff. I see. So, you know. Why don't you tell the Carly Simon story?
We're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Burbank.
Before seeing Riddick.
Getting wild and having some wings. Mm-hmm. Before Riddick. It's right attached right to the theater.
Yeah.
The Buffalo Wild Wings. It's between the Chipotle
and the theater.
And the theater.
It's like they should set it up where you could just bring your wings into the theater in a bucket.
I would really like that. Mm-hmm. You walk in there, you know, and they've got a million screens playing all the sports.
So many sports.
And then they've got a jukebox playing all the Daughtry hits.
all the Blueshammer.
All the Blueshammer. All the, you know, Avenged Sevenfold. Creed or those bands.
Yeah, the Three Doors Down.
Three Doors Down, yeah.
Man bands.
So, I'm eating my pulled pork sandwich, and you go up to wash your hands before your wings show up. And as you come back to the table, the music suddenly changes. And it becomes the Spice Girls.
Well, first it was...
No, I'm sorry. First it's Call Me Maybe. And then, which I can... I'm not tired of Call Me Maybe.
Me neither.
I know it's been well over a year.
Yeah.
I'm not tired of Call Me Maybe. Then it's the Spice Girls. I can't remember what song.
Never Give Up on the
Good Never Times. Give Up on the Good Times.
Let's be clear about that.
And then Carly Simon.
Yes.
That's the way I've always heard it should be, the song that we played for you at the beginning of this. And I just want you to sit and think, close your eyes for a minute, and think about being inside a Buffalo Wild Wings where people wear hats. They give you a hat when you walk in.
Maybe like a crown or something.
Yeah, and it says, I'm a wing nut on it. I'm not making this up. This is a story I'm telling that's all true.
Okay.
I saw a couple of girls, women, wearing the I'm a wing nut hat in the place. I walked in and they said, would you like a seat at the bar? I said, no, I want a table. Well, you can sit at the bar if you want. It's, you know, it's one person. You know, you won't need a whole table. I go, I want a table. They go, you sure? I was like, I have a friend coming. They're like, just another friend? I was like, yeah. And they go, well, you could both sit at the bar. I was like, I want a table.
You didn't tell me this part.
Yeah.
There were tons of tables.
Yes. Why was? I don't know.
Maybe you were too fat to eat there.
I'm too fat to eat at a place where they hand you out a cap that says I'm a wing nut.
Where you can order a basket of 30 if you want.
The man with the 132-pound scrotum is not too fat to eat at the wing place. He could sit at the bar and put his scrotum on the next stool.
His nuts would ride shotgun.
Happily for him, he has had the 132-pound scrotum removed, and I know because I watched the show.
Ah, that's part of his epic journey is the removal?
The surgery, yeah, they show you the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Gigantic.
Was it a tumor? What?
He had elephantitis of the nuts. I don't know what.
You watched the thing. How did you not know?
They grew abnormally, and then they became 132 pounds.
No, wait, hold on.
Over time.
Hold on.
It took many years.
Back it up. Are you telling me that the 132-pound scrotum was all testicle?
Yeah.
132 pounds?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a tumor. There weren't... fibroid something.
I'm sure it was like a fibroidy thing. I mean, it was like the thing that attached, it was like a tumory thing that grew the balls.
Okay, well, you made it sound like it was all ball.
Where does tumor begin and ball end?
Well, I think that.
Or vice versa. I don't know the answer to that.
There's tumor and there's ball.
There's. That poor man had to carry that stuff around in a wheelbarrow. So. on a two-wheeler, like he was constantly working for FedEx. And so
he had a poor guy,
he's fine now.
Well, and famous, so there you go.
It
all worked out.
But anyway, imagine sitting there in the Buffalo Wild Wing and you want to marry me. We'll marry. And that's all you hear. There's a baseball game going on 75 TV screens all around you. And Carly Simon singing like the preppiest love song.
I like to
the most bloodless. Like
I like to test the limits of what's in a jukebox. You know, it's like when Like a Prayer came out.
I know he used to play the B side, which was like all backwards and
stuff in Waffle House.
You're obnoxious. You're obnoxious.
Look, it's on the jukebox. They made it an option.
You delighted the waitress though,
who walked at Buffalo Wild Wings. Yes.
Who walked past you and goes, "Did you just do that?" And you're like, "Uh huh." And she's like, "That's hilarious." Like she was. So bored with her job, she was ready for anything.
So next time you're in a Buffalo Wild Wings
or
something of that ilk, check out the jukebox and see what Spice Girl songs they've got. Mix it up a little. That's what I'm saying here.
So, speaking of,
evening went downhill because then we had to go see Riddick.
Oh, we can't talk about Salinger first?
Oh, we can talk about Salinger first.
Because I made the segue from love songs to,
okay. Well, there
to the ultimate preppy,
there you go,
J.D. Salinger. Who grew up rich but didn't tell anybody?
Yes,
got kicked out of prep schools, which is a super preppy thing to have happen to you.
His father was an importer.
All the best people have been kicked out of prep school.
His father was Jewish and was an importer of meat and cheese.
Yes. So it wasn't old money, but it was still some money, and they were classy folks.
Well, look, you can't write Catcher in the Rye and not be a preppy and not have been kicked out from a couple of prep schools.
Yeah.
That's no question.
And so now there's a documentary about him now that he's been dead for 3 years. And it's not good.
I disagree. I don't think it's great, but I don't think it's not
good. Oh, really? Why don't you tell me what you like about it?
Why don't you start? Because there are four movies this week that you didn't see and I did.
I saw some of Winnie and almost all. No, I did watch all of Touchy Feely.
Oh, you did watch Touchy Feely? That's true. Okay.
I just didn't review it.
There's three movies.
Because when I finished watching Touchy Feely, I was like, I'm not reviewing this. Okay, I have one thing to say about this movie.
All right. Salinger, I will defend because, yes, it does a lot wrong. It has these recreations that are annoying. The score is obnoxious. But on a purely informational level, I learned a lot about Salinger. And it's a topic that I was predisposed to find interesting anyway.
Yes.
So I found the movie interesting. Did it have to be 2 hours and 10 minutes? No. No, it did not. Is Weinstein overselling its, twist shock ending like this for The Crying Game? Yes, he is.
There is no twist.
There
shock
is no
ending.
Twist shock ending.
There is no twist shock
but,
ending.
But
everything
it's
in
not
the,
like he's alive and living in the New Hebrides.
Yeah,
or something.
Everything in the so-called twist new twisty shocky ending
has been in the media.
Has already been told in the news many times already. Yeah.
Nonetheless, I found it really interesting. I think they talked to a lot of really good people. There were things they could have done better. I agree that, you know, I brought this up.
As in all of the things.
I brought it up on What the Flick, my review on The Wrap, that, you know, they dangle the whole thing of, well, you know, Hinckley and Mark David Chapman and the guy who killed Rebecca Schaefer all cited Catcher in the Rye as their sort of inspiration.
Yes.
But they don't go anywhere with it. They don't dig any deeper with it. They don't find out from anybody if Salinger had any response to this, if he had talked to anybody about it, you know, because they do talk to people who knew him and who had contact with him in the later years of his life. So they just sort of, they kind of raise it and then don't take it anywhere. And then they have a lengthy quote about it from John Guare without acknowledging the fact that Guare's play, Six Degrees of Separation, has a long speech in it about the fact that Catcher in the Rye is used to inspire murderers.
Yes.
And I was like, well, why? So, yeah, there are things about it that bug me. But I learned so much stuff, and I found a lot of it really compelling enough that I was able to forgive its, you know, all the Bigfoot sightings and the repetitive use of the limited number of photographs that exist of Mr. Salinger.
Both of them.
Why did you hate it?
Well, let's start where you were talking, that score. I don't need a documentary about the life of J.D. Salinger to have suspense music score. It's absolutely histrionic, ridiculous, you know, what are the secrets of the ancient alien civilizations? You know, it's like...
In search of Salinger.
You know, you said Bigfoot, and that is how they treat it. This is like the, you know, in search of Bigfoot. That's really what this movie is. And anything you learn about him, you could go to his wiki page and learn, or read a biography of him. There are several.
There's a new one, in fact, co-written by the director of this film.
This movie is just a... this is what it has in common with One Direction, This Is Us. It's an infomercial for a book.
Although apparently
And for a publishing phenomenon that's about to begin.
Apparently this movie was supposed to come out a couple of years ago. Like, it was not originally intended that the book and the bio were going to hit at the same time.
Right.
I'm sure at some point it became like, hey, what if we did this? You know, but it wasn't entirely a planned thing. But yeah, you're right. It does promote the bio. It does promote the fact that there is hitherto unpublished Salinger material heading our way, somewhere between 2015 and 2020. They're going to start rolling out more Glass Family, more Holden Caulfield, a World War II Romana Clay.
Yeah.
What I wanted to bring up about the B Movies podcast that bugged me, because Bibbs really hates this movie.
Good.
Bibbs and Whitney talk about how, you know, the movie talks about that, you know, Salinger was a pretty deplorable person in his relationships with young women.
He was a troubled man.
Yeah, and so you meet this woman who was the inspiration for Esme in the story to Esme with Love and Squalor, who Salinger met in Daytona Beach, Florida when she was 14 and he was 30. He was a World War II veteran, and they had a purely platonic relationship, although he did tell her mother, I'm going to marry your daughter one day. And then pretty much like after she turned 18, she finally put the moves on him. They slept together once, and then he dumped her immediately.
Right.
The movie does not let him off the hook for this. Like, the movie, they are talking to this woman, and she's telling this story, and...
She's real sad about it, still.
The movie is not in any way giving him the benefit of the doubt, or letting him off the hook, or rationalizing it. No, they are portraying him as a jerk, as a cad, as a bounder, as a terrible person, as a terrible father, and a terrible husband, and all that stuff. And Bibbs and Whitney said the movie gives him a pass, and I say, no, it does not. You can fault this movie for a lot of things. It does not give Salinger a pass for being an ass.
Okay.
That's it. I just wanted to say that.
Was that was your rebuttal to the things that's I was just
my,
saying?
No, that's my rebuttal to them.
Shut up.
As for you. No,
the reenactments are hilariously bad.
They're very clunky and stupid.
He's sitting at a desk on a stage,
in
front of a screen where things are happening, and pages are just on the floor, you know, pages of his life.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, the glass children appear sitting on the floor watching him write them.
Yeah, and, you know,
he's
in the Bradbury building.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be New York.
Supposed to be New York.
But, like, but the Bradbury building is one of the most recognizable interiors in America. So that's sort of a problem. And then the whole thing of the log...
They had to reenact him walking through the woods of New Hampshire carrying a log.
that moment that was, you know, we've all thought about, but we never knew what it would look like.
So many frustrating moments of his life. World War II, being rejected by the New Yorker, that log was too heavy. Like, so many problems that had confronted J.D. Salinger. I'm not a fan of any documentary that tries to jack up and juice up its material with fake stuff, with phony stuff. Phonies.
It's kind of like watching a... If there was a true crime show, but they ran out of murders and they had to do one about, like, mail fraud or something, and they just did... They shot it the same way they would shoot it as if it were
like
a murderer.
Yeah,
I grant you all of this. It is overdone. It is not particularly well directed. I guess I just found it informative enough I didn't know that he dated Una O'Neill before she married Charlie Chaplin. I didn't know that his first day of battle in World War II was D-Day. I didn't know that he was part of the forces that...
Welcome to the office, kid.
Exactly. I didn't know that he was one of the liberators of Dachau. Yep. I didn't know that he re-enlisted after the war to be an intelligence officer and round up Nazis.
Yeah.
And then married one of them.
Yeah.
You know, just...
A lady one.
A lady one. All these things...
Their marriage did not last.
No.
As you can imagine. Yes.
I'm sure the by Jewish the, importing dad was way, really thrilled. You know.
By the way, here's my Jewish father.
They touch upon his one previous encounter with Hollywood, which was when they turned A Perfect Day for Banana... Uncle Wiggily in Connecticut into My Foolish Heart, which is a better movie than you might think. I mean, Salinger hated it, and that's why he never sold another one of his movies, his pieces to the movies. And apparently that's why it was, you know, I think it's one of those movies kind of like Christmas Holiday where the estate has kept them from putting it out on DVD ever.
No, it's not available.
It's not on DVD. It is on VHS. Jim Fall, who's been a guest on this show, screened it for me on VHS one night, and it's a pretty good movie on its own merits. If you don't think about it as a Salinger adaptation, it's actually pretty good. Susan Hayward is really good in it. It's, you know, I don't know if it's on YouTube or, you know, it's hard to find, but if you can see My Foolish Heart, it's worth checking out. But yeah, so Salinger, problematic film, but I was compelled enough by the source material and by what was being covered that I was okay with it.
It's so hyperactive and so overwrought and so, like, just, it's just dumb, and it makes you not like his work by the time it's over. You know, not really, not for long, but it makes you feel, it gives you a bad taste in your mouth. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of J.D. Salinger. And when I was a kid, Catcher in the Rye was one of those teenage books, like every teenager who reads Catcher in the Rye. It changes your life in some way sometimes. I mean, I've been hearing from people on Facebook who hated Catcher in the Rye when they read it as teenagers.
Really?
And who still hate it and hate him and hate everything.
Oh, God.
I think that's interesting, too. I'd be interested to hear more about why they feel that way. But for me, it was one of those books that was the first open door to leaving the Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started reading it when I heard it had been banned by many schools. And I thought, well, I'm going to read that then. And then when I told my youth minister that I was in the middle of reading it, he said, you should stop reading that book. And I was like, why? And he said, well, you know, I haven't read it, but he goes, I know the language is very bad, and they take the Lord's name in vain. And it's I know also that it inspires rebellion.
No.
And I thought to myself, okay, now I'm going to go home and finish the rest of it in one afternoon. I can't wait to see if this gets crazier, you know.
I'm going
to
read this right now.
But someone in the movie, here's the one good thing about the movie, who I don't remember who says this, but they talk about Catcher in the Rye as being the book that kids read and their world opens up.
Yeah.
They realize that they are no longer just themselves, that they are part of the world. And that world is completely unreliable and is going to harm them every chance it gets.
I remember my older brother Javier almost solemnly handing me The Catcher in the Rye when I was about 12. Like, I think I was on the verge of my teenage years and on the verge of entering high school, and it was just like, he was like, you are old enough for this now, you need to read this now.
Now you are a man.
Now, yeah, kind of. That was my bar mitzvah, was being handed The Catcher in the Rye by my older brother.
What do they call bar mitzvahs in Spanish?
They don't, I
come on.
Bar mitzvah? I don't know. I mean, it's already in Hebrew, so they, you know. It's not like there's a Spanish term for it. I'm not Jewish. I don't know.
There are Jewish people in Spain.
There are Jewish people in Spain.
What do they call a bar mitzvah?
I don't... Find one and ask them. I don't know.
Well, you're from the family that knows all the other Spaniards in the world.
But not the Jewish ones. No, I don't... I honestly don't know what the word is. My other real-life Salinger story is that I met Matt Salinger.
You did.
Who people may remember from Revenge of the Nerds. He also played Captain America in the terrible 1990 Canon Films version, or maybe it wasn't Canon, like 21st Century, whatever. Mm-hmm. Either Golan or Globus had their mitts on that one. This is back when Marvel would just give the rights to anybody, apparently. He was very nice. He came to Dallas for the USA Film Festival. He was producing a film called Let the Devil Wear Black. And he came with the director, who was the woman who directed that Mod Squad movie.
Oh, wow. Remember that? That was Claire Danes. With
Claire Danes, yeah. And we had dinner, and they were super charming, and it was a great time. And I never once... Beforehand, I thought, okay, not going to bring up his dad, not going to bring up Revenge of the Nerds, not going to bring up Captain America. I did not. And he was charming and obviously very well traveled and tons of stories about all manner of things. But, you know, I just, you know, the elephant in the room went unacknowledged. Because I figured this guy had it up to here with those questions at this point. So,
yeah, anyway, everywhere he goes, I'm sure.
I'm sure he had a tumultuous and not great childhood in a lot of ways because his dad was off in the writing hut. Ignoring his family, but I would say based on one dinner, Matt Salinger turned out okay. He is not in the film. He's barely even referenced in the film. I mean, he's mentioned a couple times. There's a few photographs, but no film clips.
Told him, you better not talk about me or I'll have you done.
Who knows?
I'll get that girl from Twitter to end you.
That's right. Because his sister Margaret pops up because she published her own memoir about life with Daddy in 2000 and went on the Today Show and Katie Couric interviewed her. That footage is in the film. But I guess Matt is sort of, you know, not really made himself available for that sort of thing. And I just thought, I thought surely they would have like some Revenge of the Nerds clip or something just to kind of show here's, you know, with like an arrow around him. And like, this is Matt Salinger.
All right, Riddick.
Yes. The third appearance of Vin Diesel as Riddick, who I find to be a thoroughly uninteresting character, although Pitch Black is fun. Pitch Black is a fun, sort of quick and dirty B-movie. I did not see The Chronicles of Riddick, which apparently was bloated and ridiculous and tedious, and even though Judi Dench is in it, which I would kill. I'll have to pull up on YouTube just to see moments of Judi Dench.
Like invisible Judi Dench.
Having to act opposite Vin Diesel. I mean, like... I'm sure her mind traveled back to her days at RADA or something where, you know, she had to play Lady Macbeth against a hat rack.
Yeah.
You
know? Oh, young man.
Could I make a suggestion?
So, Riddick, if you don't know anything about Riddick, you don't have to know anything about Riddick because... This movie is a complete story all by itself. All you really need to know is that he's a bad murderer alien guy with eyes that glow and he sees things all overblown.
He sees in the dark, so and when it's not only, dark, yes.
Right, but he has to use his goggles to do it, and because otherwise he sees all crazy.
Right.
And he's on a planet. He's trying to get home to Furia, but he's on not Furia. That's what they call it in the film, not Furia. And
he makes the mistake of trusting Carl Urban and his guy liner.
Mm-hmm. So he's got to get off the planet because it's not gonna be able to host him for much longer because it's
everything on it wants to eat him.
They've got the cobra, scorpion things. Sorry, I just hit the microphone.
And I've pterodactyl got the, vultures.
They've got the and they've got the hyena.
Zebra dingoes.
Dingo doggies. And so, he tames one of the puppies to be his pet, and then he inoculates himself with the venom of a cobra scorpion monster
and the dingo.
Chops the head off of it, and it doesn't even have a head, but he chops it, and
he bifurcates another one.
Sets up a homing device to get the bounty hunter crews to come get him and try to kill him so he can steal his ship and get off the planet. And they come and then they fight. It's the end.
And then in the third act, they kind of reenact Pitch Black where night falls and the monstery things come out.
Yeah. So I hate this movie.
I was bored out of my mind.
I laughed quite a bit. And during those parts where I was laughing, I thought, well, this is kind of like an intentionally schlocky B-movie where they're trying to... They're almost half goofing on themselves. They're trying to make you laugh. And I was ready to go along with that. But then came Katie Sackhoff.
Mm-hmm.
She's from Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
A bunch of other things. And she plays this warrior, badass, lesbian. Stated, I don't F guys.
Yeah.
I just F them up.
Right.
Now, I've had quite a lengthy conversation with Bibbs about this.
Yes, and whereas he defends this on
he's
on
right show. About Salinger and he's wrong about this movie.
he's wrong in several ways because he thought this movie was fun.
I don't actually think he's wrong. I just think that we have approached Riddick's back door from different directions. And my perspective is that in spite of the fact that this is intended to be a vintage pulpy
somebody was saying that
object
that a lot of shots in this film look like they could have been Tor paperback covers.
Yeah. And it's meant to be a throwback, I'd say, to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where the sexual dynamics between men and women were very caveman-like.
Rapey, in other words.
Yeah, rapey. And so at one point, he says that he's going to go 132-pound scrotum deep into Katie Sackhoff. He says that.
Yes.
And then it gets weirder and worse. And he says, but only after she asks him for it. And here's the quote, real sweet-like.
Yeah.
So what you have here is, you know, I'm going to get real PC here right now. You've got this beneficiary of absolute masculine privilege announcing to anyone who happens to be listening that he's going to take this woman. And she's a lesbian, so furthermore, she's going to become part of the oldest straight guy fantasy in the book, turning the man-hating lesbian into a purring sex kitten.
Right.
For your wiener.
Pussy galore syndrome.
And now, in Bibbs' defense, he pointed out all of the loopholes in the plot that allowed for this to be considered not rape. Technically, he's correct. Because when he brought that back to me, he said, well, yeah, but she wasn't there when he said it, and he didn't know that she was a lesbian. I said, okay, yes, however. And in spite of this film's, you know, sort of old-fashioned qualities, it's not Mad Men. It exists now.
It's the future, in fact.
It exists now. This film exists now in the culture as we experience it now.
Right.
And its audience, its cult audience, is young men. Who's, you know...
Are going to miss the finer shading.
Yeah, who's fap-fap-fap-oriented thought process on this subject. Yeah.
They get Katie Sackhoff's side boob in this movie, too, as a bonus.
They're going to... All they're seeing, and I know that's not the film's responsibility to make the audience, you know, respond properly. The audience response is not the film's responsibility.
However,
this movie exists in a world where men routinely announce what they're going to do to women, and then they go do it, and that makes it part of rape culture, defiantly and happily and openly. And at the end of the movie, here comes a spoiler, if you haven't seen Riddick yet and you're going to and you're not liking the idea of hearing about how it ends, you have 5 seconds to turn down your volume for the next 15 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Turn it down. He saves her life from whatever, from the bad things. And guess what she does in return for him? She asks him real sweet-like. You may now turn your podcast back up. It's gross. It's so gross. It's got rape, stink, and anti-gayness and everything all over it.
Although, I was... The ending was so confusingly edited, I wasn't even entirely sure what was going on. Like, I thought maybe the joke was she was straddling him because she's rescuing him out from, like, a helicopter or from the spaceship or whatever, and basically having to pull him back up. And the joke being that this is what you're getting from me. Like, I'm straddling you and I'm asking you nice to come with me because I'm actually rescuing you off of this cliff.
You could interpret it that way, perhaps. But you know what happened.
I'm not defending the film. I'm just saying it's like that. That's
in that universe, you know what happened.
They provide sort of an out where they, which I'm sure if you were to bring this up to David Toohey or, you know, any of the creators, they would say, oh, well, no, nothing happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's gross. It's creepy. So, and all of that on top of a movie that's not well made or or interesting or fun to watch.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I keep banging my mic around.
Knock it off.
I'll try to. Ask me real sweet-like, and I might
knock it off.
Ooh, baby, yeah. I'm going to stop knocking my mic around now. So, yeah, I have to give Bibbs his correctness. He is correct about the way the plot mechanics give everybody an out from being,
right,
from being accused of being super ugly and rapey.
Mm-hmm.
Be that as it may, it is super ugly and rapey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This movie's barf.
All right.
Okay, touchy-feely.
Weenie.
No, touchy.
No, weenie.
Okay, weenie.
Weenie.
Everybody says weenie in this movie.
Weenie.
Winnie Mandela. It is the first of two Mandela movies that we're getting this year. The Weinstein Company has one coming out in November with, is it Idris Elba and Naomi Harris?
Yes.
Which just premiered at Toronto to rave reviews. This is the other one with Jennifer Hudson and Terrence Howard.
The other one.
The other one. directed by Daryl Root, who did Serafina and did the remake of Cry the Beloved Country, so he knows his apartheid cinema. And it's okay. It's a pretty standard biopic. There's a couple of things I think that make this movie interesting. One, Jennifer Hudson is really good in it. And I think that there was kind of this feeling that, yeah, she won that Oscar for Dreamgirls because it was about her singing that one song and she did it really well. But she's not really an actress, you know. You see her in, you know, Sex and the City or something. You don't necessarily think, you know, she's got other...
Turns out...
She's got chops.
The show is called Classes. Because she's been taking them.
Really?
Look.
I sat here at the table
while you were watching this movie, and I glanced up from time to time, and she was acting.
Yeah,
she was doing it.
Yeah, she's really good. And so I found her performance really powerful. And Terrence Howard, I at first thought, oh, this is a big mistake. You did not cast this guy as Nelson
Baby
Mandela.
Wipes.
Baby Wipes, exactly. Because I was still thinking about him, like, putting the moves on Oprah in Lee Daniels' The Butler, you know.
Which, I gotta say... He's real good in The Butler because he's
playing a total skeeve.
He's skeeve in The Butler. And watching him interact with Oprah is like, I kind of want to see The Butler again.
What?
Just for Oprah doing her thing and Cuba Gooding Jr. Everything
you got in this life you owe to that butler.
All the raunchy, weird Lee Daniels freaky stuff.
The matching onesies.
Yeah, all that stuff is why I want to go see The Butler again.
Fair enough. So I thought okay, why Terrence Howard? I'm not going to buy his Mandela, but actually, you know, he does skeeve really well, but he can also do non-skeeve when he feels like it, and yes, he does non-skeeve here, and it's good. So their performances are really interesting. The other thing that I thought was kind of cool about Winnie Mandela is that if you know Winnie Mandela's life story, like, things got nutty towards the later years there.
She had a few complications.
She had some complications.
Some Salinger-esque situations.
You know, and granted, she had a rough life and got treated very badly by the apartheid government. So
I think very badly is sort of a really crazy understatement.
She was put in solitary confinement for a long time. She was banished from Soweto after the uprising in 1976.
Abused and tortured and oppressed. And
yeah, she just, was... She was.
They did everything they could to destroy her.
She was crushed under the heels of the jackboot.
Okay.
So if she then kind of overreacted to certain things later...
With some insanity.
With some possible insanity and at least being nearby a murderer, whether or not she called for it. Right. You know, that's another thing. The movie actually acknowledges all this stuff. Like, you think that a biopic of Winnie Mandela might sort of gloss over it and that Jennifer Hudson would just sort of play her as this kind of, you know, smiling through her tears martyr. No, no, no. They go to the bat-ass crazy place and talk about it and show it and include it, and it is in there. So, you know, this is not Jobs. This is not one of those movies where they sort of, like, sand down the rougher edges. Beyond that, however, it is pretty by-the-numbers biopic stuff. Yeah. So it's not a particularly great movie. I suspect the other Mandela movie will probably bury it in the dust.
Well, yes.
But it's not terrible. There are good things in it, and Jennifer Hudson, I think, is sort of like throwing down and saying, I'm an actress, like, that Oscar was not a fluke, I really can do this.
And I am telling you, I'm not going.
And I am telling you, I am not leaving the picture business. So good for her. Also this week, 99%, the Occupy Wall Street collaborative film.
I didn't watch 1 second of this.
Yeah, I was watching on my...
Unlike Winnie, where I saw bits and pieces.
Right, I was watching it on my laptop.
I didn't see any of this.
Interesting movie. It's basically...
I'm going to sit here and drink some more tea.
Okay. It's about the first year, really, of the Occupy Wall Street movement. And they talk about sort of where it came out of, all the different, you know, the things going on with corporations and the banks and the government and whatnot. And then they had footage from hundreds of people. So you have this mix of professionally shot footage and TV stuff, and then people's iPhones, you know, or webcams or whatever. It's obviously made from a very pro-Occupy place, which is fine. I wish they had more kind of cranky voices of dissent, like Naomi Wolf, who's terrific, and she really is obviously glad that Occupy existed and believes in their agenda, but at the same time raises, you know, valid questions about their methods and their legacy and their results. And I think the movie could have stood a little more of that. But if you are an Occupy supporter and you want to kind of get wrapped up in the excitement of all the you know, the Zuccotti Park and everything that happened all over again, you know, it's worth taking a look at. Matt Taibbi shows up to provide a lot of background. They interweave stories of, like, a woman in Detroit whose house was being repossessed, and people who faced down the cops and got tear gas and that kind of thing. It's hard to,
AKA people who were walking,
yeah, anybody who showed up. I think it's hard to nail down Occupy, because part of their whole existence was, They were non-hierarchical. They didn't have spokespersons. They didn't have a sort of a stated agenda for a lot of things. And so it's hard to kind of tell a history of that when there are a million different versions of what Occupy even was, because there was sort of never an official one. And I think Naomi Wolf, provocatively, but she has a point in saying that, yes, okay, great, you introduced income inequality into the national conversation. That's nice, but that's not a victory, and that's not enough. And that's the kind of thing that the people in power are thrilled to have you think is a victory, because then you aren't going after campaign finance reform. You aren't going after the Patriot Act and all the laws that made it easy for the cops to crack down on what should have been protected.
You aren't fixing everything at once.
It's a difference between sort of a rhetorical thing and tangible results. And I don't think she's saying that introducing income inequality into the media, into the national conversation wasn't a good thing.
Right.
But you can't stop there. You can't think, oh well, did that. You know, and she's right. She's right. And I think a lot of there should be a lot of object lessons out of Occupy about getting the Bill of Rights back in a lot of ways. Right. You know, when you have cops who can break up peaceable assemblies for no good reason and claim some sort of fear of terrorism, when you have reporters who don't want to cover the story because the cops are threatening to take away their NYPD press badge,
yes,
which would then get them fired from their, you know, daily beat job at the Daily News or whatever.
Right.
You know, that's the that these are big tangible things that somebody should maybe go after.
Yes.
Anyway, but it's an interesting movie. It's worth checking out. I don't think it's on VOD. It opened limited this weekend, but it should be making its way around.
I was just thinking about the other part of Salinger that I thought was hilarious.
What's that?
Because I was barely paying attention to what you just said.
Oh,
the part where everyone talks about how much they love Catcher in the Rye. And the whole world, like,
and they cut to people reading it.
They
in
cut
all these
to
languages.
People reading it in all these different countries, and people holding up their copies and smiling. And then the screen, like, becoming mitosis, where it divides and divides and divides until there's like 1,000 little squares of people on the screen, all waving their copy of Catcher in the Rye. Like, here's everyone loving Catcher in the Rye all together. And it's kind of like a phone commercial in
sort
a way.
Of, yeah.
Like, they might as well be waving their phone at you. anyway, I was just thinking about that. It's pretty great.
The other thing about...
You should really go see Salinger just for that part and for the part where he carries the big log. Yeah.
The other Salinger thing I was going to mention, I didn't... You get these interviews with Martin Sheen and Philip Seymour Hoffman and John Cusack and Edward Norton that don't really add anything. I'm sure it made it easier to cut a trailer, but none of these guys have anything particularly insightful
nothing.
To
they
add.
Have nothing to say.
I think...
Sure is good reading...
I think, though, Salinger. That they should have interviewed Wes Anderson.
Yes.
Because The Royal Tenenbaums is sort of the Lost Glass Family novel in a lot of ways.
Yes.
So that's, you know, that was a missed opportunity there.
Okay, so...
Also this week...
A Door. I did not see A Door.
Shadow.
Make it fast.
Okay, I saw A Door at Sundance
this
year.
Nobody else is going to see this movie.
Under the title Two Mothers, and it stars Naomi Watts and Robin Wright as lifelong friends growing up on the Australian coast. And they each have beautiful, hunky surfing sons, and eventually wind up having affairs with each other's beautiful, hunky surfing sons. And you think, wow, that sounds like a really smutty premise. Surely there's something more interesting going on. Nope, it's just smutty and stupid.
So
and
it's Stacy's Mom, the movie.
Yeah, it's yeah. Well, no, it's Lonely Island's Mother Lover.
Both good.
Yes, neither needed to be a feature film. It's so... Like sun-dappled softcore sex. It's just so stupid. I mean, it's one thing when, you know, Robin Wright starts having the forbidden affair with Naomi Watts's, with her best friend's son, you know. But then when Robin Wright's son comes on to Naomi Watts, clearly, you know, like just wanting to sort of get revenge or something.
Right.
And Naomi Watts is a grown woman and would be smart enough to know this. She hesitates for about 5 seconds. Before taking the plunge. And
you can get it from Naomi Watts.
Yeah, apparently so. It's just on the back of her robe. This movie just gets dumber and dumber, and it's like the kinkiest Hollister commercial you've ever seen. Everybody's so pretty, and yeah.
Well, is it worth looking at then because of that? Like, would I think it's funny and would I want to watch it?
I mean, we did laugh at it at Sundance. I told you that story where the filmmaker came on stage like, I did not know I had made a comedy.
Well, you know, now you do.
It's based on a Doris Lessing story, and it's written by Christopher Hampton, who is prestigious but a hack. You know, he won an Oscar for adapting Dangerous Liaisons. Yeah, this movie is junk, but it is sexy time junk if you're in the mood for that sort of thing, I guess.
Horny.
Horny junk. All right, and that leaves us with Touchy Feely.
Which is about a Reiki dentist. Not rapey dentist.
Reiki.
Reiki dentist. The end.
It's Lynn Shelton's new film. She did Hump Day and Your Sister's Sister. And this one stars Rosemary DeWitt as a massage therapist who's having trouble in her personal life. Her boyfriend wants her to move in and she's hesitant to do so. And so it winds up manifesting itself in that she suddenly is repulsed by the idea of touching anyone. Which is tricky when you're a massage therapist.
You see, and they have big close-ups of people's skin.
The pores.
Yeah, and so gross. All this, it's so nasty to look at...
Epidermis.
Close-ups of skin, and I'm... No wonder, who wouldn't
you're
be repulsed by this?
Crawling with mites.
Yeah.
It's... pretty dumb. And the thing is, there are these really interesting side characters, any of whom I would have rather have seen a film about.
Ellen Page.
Josh Pace. Who's terrific.
Who's not a household name, but he's
but you
best,
know his face.
He's the best thing in the movie.
Yeah, he's dynamite. Scoot McNairy's good. Allison Janney. But it's just...
I want to have a nickname like Scoot.
Scoot?
I do.
Scoot White.
I don't have...
Flash Brown.
My name is so boring.
Flash Brown.
I need a Flash Brown. I need a cool nickname like Scoot. Someone help me figure that out.
Maybe that could be a contest.
What it's gonna be? Nickname me. It's gotta be cool, like Scoot. I don't like Lynn Shelton's films.
I like Your Sister's Sister, but that's it.
No, I thought Hump Day was terrible. Your Sister's Sister was had some moments. This has some moments. But you know what? We already have
the Duplass brothers.
The Duplass brothers, and we already have
Joe Swanberg
and Nicole Holofcener is where I was actually going.
Yes, totally. And I'm blanking.
Kelly Reichardt, we've got her.
Guy who made my favorite film this year, Noah Baumbach.
Yeah, I don't see what I'm supposed to see from her movies.
We don't need you, Lynn Shelton.
I don't.
Go direct episodes of Girls or something.
I mean, I don't want to crap on her, because I'm sure she's really nice.
She's lovely.
But her work so far, and I'm not going to, you know... forever bar, you know, close the door on it.
Sure.
But three films, how many more? Four? I don't know how many movies she's made.
I just know of the three, but I could be wrong.
I'm not into them.
I did like Your Sister's Sister, although really I think what I really liked was Act One of Your Sister's Sister. The whole long dinner table getting drunk scene between Mark Duplass and Rosemary DeWitt.
I think there are really good moments between actors.
Yes.
I think there are good performances in her film.
Sure.
But I don't think there's ever...
They don't add up to anything.
...much more going on than that. And I walk away from them thinking,
Would you have liked
what was
Hump
I
Day,
supposed to do?
Would you have liked Hump Day better if the two dudes had actually banged at the end?
Yes. And that's not just because I'm gay.
No.
It's because
That's what the movie was leading up to.
The movie was leading up to that. For some reason or other.
Yeah.
And then it lets them off the hook.
Yeah. And the audience.
It never interrogates them the way it should.
Right.
And the idea of fake, cool person bravado is interesting. The idea of the desire to be bohemian, the desire to break some rules, the desire to do something out of the ordinary, and to do it ostentatiously in a way that will draw attention to yourself, which is what the premise of that film was, and then to not have to do it at all. And the movie's just sort of like, yeah, we just didn't feel like it.
Or even if the movie had been about them chickening out,
right,
about that bravado having a limit,
there was nothing going on in Hump Day, so it wasn't a prurient interest on my part to see these two guys bone. I could watch porn for that,
right?
But
do they make hipster porn?
like they say in True Stories, if you can imagine it exists somewhere,
right.
Yeah. I think she's too soft on her characters. I don't think she's...
I agree.
I don't think she's... I don't think she has... let me say this differently. She has too much pity and mercy for her characters. She needs to push them around a little harder.
Which is not to say that she has to become Todd Solondz overnight, but I see what you get, where you're going with that.
So, Lynn Shelton, if you're listening, we've got so much advice for you.
Dave would like you to be more Brissonian.
I was going to go this entire podcast without bringing up him.
No, you weren't.
I was.
You were not.
I was. I've been thinking about that a lot. I don't want to become a one-note dude who's always like, Brisson, Brisson, Brisson.
Well, you're about to start tackling the John Ford catalog.
I am.
So stay tuned for
that.
Watch
out, y'all. Wait till I start talking about John Ford every episode. It's going to be amazing. No, again, she's made very few films. I will be an undecided jury on Lynn Shelton. She might be working towards something that I will respond to one of these days.
No, because you're right.
I just haven't responded to it yet.
They do all have moments. I think if she can maintain the best parts of her work consistently throughout a film, they have her onto something. What's your DVD pick this week?
The Friday the 13th box.
Ah, yes.
Every Friday the 13th movie ever made, including the crappy remake, including my all-time favorite, Jason X, including my second all-time favorite, Freddy vs. Jason, where Kelly Rowland from Destiny's Child calls Freddy Krueger the F-A-G-G-O-T word. It's the best!
And if you're a Friday the 13th fanatic, incidentally, also coming out this week is the documentary Crystal Lake Memories, which has oodles and oodles of interviews and backstory and everything you ever wanted to know about the making of the entire franchise.
Here's what I love about Jason Voorhees. He always does what he says he's going to do.
He doesn't speak.
Metaphorically.
Oh. And he's not even in the first movie.
That's correct. Well, he is, but he's drowning.
Well, yes. Not waving.
He's here to murder you, and he's going to get some murdering done. And you can always count on him to be murdering. And as a fan of murdering, I'm deeply satisfied by every single one of the Friday the 13th movies, even the terrible ones.
Even the one with Horshack?
Except for the crappy remake. I resent the crappy remake.
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest of them, I'm A-okay 100% wow number one. With all of them.
I was never a big... I mean, I'm not a horror guy in general. I was never a big fan of them.
No, you're not, because you're a giant baby.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I even kind of didn't hate the remake, so that really underscores how problems. Not a fan of this
you
franchise
are, yeah, you have serious problems.
Anyway, my DVD pick this week, actually... There was nothing that was coming out this week that really grabbed me, so the 99% documentary reminded me that if you haven't seen Inside Job, which really nails down the whole... why everything went to hell in 2008, all the mortgage swaps and the I can't even remember the terminology.
And I'm going to add another one to that, the corporation.
Right, yes.
Those two, watch them both. Start with the corporation, then watch Inside Job.
And then you two will start camping protesting out everything. Wall Street, because holy crap.
The corporation is the most terrifying documentary that I've seen in the past decade. It's you think you know all the things that are being done to you by businesses, gigantic businesses that are accountable to no one. You don't.
As Jeremy Irons would say, you have no idea.
It goes all the way to the top. You're playing a dangerous game.
So check those out.
Letters. I got them.
Are we giving away the...
not today. Here's why.
We're extending the Your Next Mask contest?
We are extending the Your Next Mask contest because last week being Labor Day, we recorded a podcast and it existed in a near vacuum. I believe that the three entries that we have received in the Your Next Mask contest were from the three people who listened to last week's podcast. Therefore, if you would like to win the Your Next Wolf Mask, this lovely molded plastic mask...
With an
elastic thing in the back to hold it onto your head while you...
Terrorize
an entire family in the woods.
Not that we endorse this course of
action. You will write a 50-word essay. 50 words or less. Do not exceed 50 words.
We will count them.
You will then email that 50 words or less email as to why you should have the mask to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Correct. And, you know,
I will not post it on our wall. You will not
comment on something.
Put it anywhere else, because that is a rule violation, and you will be disqualified no matter how good it is.
It just occurred to me, I need to keep putting on all of the new things we post on linoleum-knife.com that we are not running comments on linoleum-knife.com.
That is correct, we are not.
Not having it. But we are accepting letters from readers at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if it's good enough, and you'll probably get put up on the site.
We will periodically start running them. I have one that I'm sitting on that I haven't gotten to yet, but... yeah, we will. We will totally
we
share.
We believe in having individual conversations with people, and we'll even have individual conversations with you if you email us. But
even if you hate what we're
the
doing,
the content on our site not... is put there by us, and we don't care about anyone else's opinion except our own.
No, it's, I mean, if you have a dissenting opinion and you write us a reasonable, non-insulting email about it, then we will post it.
We've been very lucky about that so far. We've only ever had a handful, less than a handful, of people who are complaining to us about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been very nice.
Yeah.
But the minute you open up comments on a website, you're just...
out come the 12-year-olds and low-functioning
adults.
You might
as well, you might as well just go live in the sewer, because that's how, that's what it becomes right away.
Right.
And there's no amount of monitoring that can make it not happen.
Right.
So we're not doing it. Honestly, I believe it is a non-progressive model of communication anyway. Now that we have Facebook and Twitter, that old school idea of putting comments under a piece of written work on a website is already old fashioned, and I don't believe it's necessary anymore. So there.
Meh.
Yeah.
So yeah, so send us your entries for the your next mask, and what letters do we have this week?
All right. This is from Wendy. Subject, Utilikilts. We were just in Seattle this summer, and being near the Utilikilt store was enough to finally get my husband to buy one. He rocks the kilt. I like my husband's knees. Wendy. So, here's the situation in Wendy's house. Wendy likes a man in a Utilikilt. Wendy finally got her husband to buy a Utilikilt. Wendy loves him in the Utilikilt. She likes his knees in the skirt.
Uh-huh.
Under this circumstance, I can endorse the Utilikilt. If it is that much of a fetish object
for someone else,
for someone that you love to be putting it on and wearing it, like, come on, baby, put on that blonde wig for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of dope.
What's the awful line he has after that? It can't matter to you.
Yeah, it can't possibly matter to you. So I can imagine. Here's what I love to imagine.
So Wendy is Scotty Ferguson in this scenario.
Wendy is James Stewart in Vertigo in this situation. and her husband is Kim Novak, just manipulated and controlled.
She's dragged him to the Utilikilt. Yeah. Really, the only reason they even went to Seattle was to be near the Utilikilt store. It was in the back of her mind the whole time.
This letter is in response to us trashing the idea of men in Utilikilts last week as being worse than cargo shorts.
Yes.
But yeah, I like the idea of him being like, yes, dear, whatever. Like,
will you love me now?
Will you love me now? Yeah. So thanks, Wendy. Thank you for listening to the show. And thank you for being a complete pervert and putting your husband in a skirt. Hooray!
She's one of our most devoted listeners.
She is, and that's why I think she's so great. And that is why I feel like I can speak so openly with her right now. This is from Karen. Mm-hmm. This is all lady letters
ladies
today.
Ladies' night.
In light of Alonzo's dislike of Shawshank Redemption and the fact that my recent unemployment has given me time to think of such things, I decided to make a top 10 list of movies the general population seems to love that I just don't. Not necessarily good movies, but movies that will get the, oh, really, really, amongst my peers. Number one, A Clockwork Orange.
Whoa.
I've seen it once and tried to watch it again, but I simply could not stand this movie. Just too ultra-violent.
Fair enough.
Okay, so you're wrong about that.
I knew somebody in high school who couldn't stand that movie because she her biggest, phobia in the world was anybody touching her eyeball. Like, oh, she couldn't even wear contact lenses because she was so fucked up. Never. So the whole thing of the eyes being pried open with the drops, she's like...
I have to wear reading glasses, but if there ever came a day when I had to wear them 24/7, you would never see me in a pair of contacts. The idea of something touching my eyeball is too gnarly.
It's funny because I wore contacts in high school and off and on throughout my adult life. And when you first do it, you're just like... and it just feels like the weirdest thing, and you're just like, and you're blinking, and you're like,
fingers
you're
all are covered afraid in germs. About
it. Well, you have to wash your hands first. You're all afraid matter. Of it. And then after you've had them on for like 6 months, a year, you are like reaching in your eye to find that lens. You're touching your eyeball. No. You don't even care anymore. No. Have you ever talked about like during rugby games, like just, you know, just reaching in for that thing. And it's true. You totally...
I have gotten...
It stops being a thing. Because you know what your eye is constantly doing? Mm-hmm. Washing itself.
You know what my eye somehow doesn't do frequently enough? Wash itself. I've gotten conjunctivitis just from looking at, you know, the trash can. Like, there's no... There's something... I'm a delicate, fragile little flower.
Orchid.
And I will always be wearing glasses if I need them.
All right, fine.
So, okay, Karen, you're wrong about A Clockwork Orange. Number two, Eraserhead. The art house kid's favorite. She said, I found it overly pretentious and just silly. Okay, so you're wrong about that one, too. Three, Dazed and Confused. Maybe because I have never smoked pot, I do think this one is due a revisit. Now,
I believe so, yes. You should.
You're also wrong about Dazed and Confused because it's a work of genius.
Mm-hmm.
And I, too, have, well, okay, I've not never smoked pot, but I have barely ever done it.
I don't know that it's a prerequisite.
I'm 49 years old, and I have, I am 49 years old, and the number of times I have used that stuff makes other people laugh and point at me. They're like, oh, God, you're so dumb and lame. Like, all the cool people in my life have always been like, really? Three times? Like, it's not three times, but it might as well be.
I don't think that it's a prerequisite to have smoked pot much or at all.
Each time
to get dazed and confused.
Each time I've done it has been sort of like ineffectual and weird and not. I mean,
I think
there was the cookie, but that, that was.
I think that
that was different.
Dazed and Confused, more than being a pot movie, is a One Crazy Night movie.
Yeah,
which there's a very proud tradition of. You know, American Graffiti and 16 Candles and. And whatnot, and I think it falls firmly into that kind of movie, and so, yeah, you should totally give it another look. It's really great.
Number four, Wedding Crashers. Her comment is, a-holes are just not that funny. And you're right about Wedding Crashers. It's not funny.
Not particularly, no.
Old School, see number four. You know, Old School makes me laugh.
Never seen it.
But it's basically the cousin of Wedding Crashers.
Right.
Meet the Parents.
Also never seen it.
I saw it. She writes, I had a roommate that watched it every time it was on. It just got more and more boring and annoying. Of all the Fockers films, Meet the Parents is the best, but that's not saying very much. Mm. It's mildly amusing sometimes. Zoolander. And she says, maybe it's a Ben Stiller thing. For you, I think it is.
Clearly, yeah. Zoolander is dumb, but it has enough funny.
Zoolander is dumb, but it's kind of funny. Reality Bites. She writes, it must be a Ben Stiller thing. This was supposed to be the movie of my peer group, but I cared nothing for any of the people in it, though I still quote the P-Flag bit. P-Flag.
That movie, I have to...
P-Flag.
I have not seen Reality Bites since it played.
Since it came out, yeah.
And at the time, it kind of annoyed me, just because I felt like, you know, they were really trying so hard to be, like, generational. I'd be curious to see how it holds up now. I mean, you know, I told you they're turning into a sitcom.
Yeah.
A period 90s
Yeah, that
sitcom.
90s show, basically.
Basically,
yeah,
yes,
I like Reality Bites, but only because of Janine Garofalo.
She's great. When she says that Evian is naive backwards, that
she's
always
the best,
stayed with me.
She's the best thing in the movie. The Winona, Ethan Hawke stuff bored me.
Oh, speaking of Ben Stiller, I finally saw the...
She should have gone off with Ben Stiller.
Totally, yes. Not that creep. I finally saw the Walter Mitty trailer.
It's a good trailer, isn't it?
It's a really good trailer.
It's a really good trailer.
Yeah, I try to avoid trailers, but I went out. It was broiling hot here this weekend, and we don't have air conditioning, so I went to see The World's End again on Friday night with our friend Sean and Maddie, just to get out of the house and into
Matt. You called him Maddie.
Everybody calls him Maddie.
Not everybody. The world calls him Matt.
Really?
Yeah, Type Bros call him Matty, and
I didn't know there was a non-Matty population.
There is a non-Matty population. Yeah.
Oh well, forgive me. Sean and Matthew and I went to see The World's End, so that I could have some refrigerated air, and I saw the trailer for Walter Mitty, and it looks amazing.
The perks of being a wallflower.
Ooh.
She writes, "Oh, I so wanted to love this movie, but there was something missing. Maybe because my island of misfit toys was heavily drugged and sexed up, and I was neither." You're wrong about The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, now come on.
So precious that it totally turned me off. See also, but not nearly as bad, Juno.
Wait, she's saying Juno is not as bad as Little Miss Sunshine? Oh, no.
I think it's the other way around.
Now you're doubly wrong.
I think it's the other way around, really.
Yeah, Juno is way more precious.
I've only seen Little Miss Sunshine once when I wrote about it. I thought it was very sweet. I thought it had a sort of,
I think it's a very well-structured road comedy.
Streak to it that I appreciated. Otherwise, I don't know what to say about it. So, you know, we're not going to knife you on this list.
Of course. And look, again, this all started because I don't like Shawshank.
Shawshank Redemption.
And everyone else does. So you are certainly entitled to be contrarian about a few movies.
Here's another letter. Hey, guys. For some reason, I did go see Space Hunter in 3D when it opened. We talked about Space Hunter a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and neither of us had seen it in 3D.
What I remember was walking out thinking, boy, that was awful, but the little 12-year-old red-haired girl was good. So that when 16 Candles opened, the name Molly Ringwald made me perk up and want to go see it, which I did. Once she got famous, I noticed that Space Hunter rarely appeared in her list of credits. That's from Eric.
When 16 Candles came out, I only knew her as the girl from Tempest.
Oh, funny. Alonzo and Dave, I really like the look and feel of the linoleum-knife.com site.
Thank you.
I had this speck of an idea, and I'm not saying that you use it, but it was funny to me. The general public is always misspelling Alonzo's name.
It's true.
It is Alonzo with an S, not Liza with a Z.
Correct.
And you also generally don't get into replying to internet comments on your reviews. I had this thought that there could be another section, could even be written by another person, called Alfonso and Durwood Read Your Hate Mail. No, because you know what happened then?
You're just encouraging
people. People would intentionally write us obnoxious fake hate mail.
Right.
Like our friends would start doing it just to bust our balls. I know that's what
would
happen.
Maybe they're already doing it. Who knows?
It would consist of highlighting some of the colorful comments from the Joe and Jane Blows of the internet world. You don't even have to take any of the blame, since you guys are neither Alfonso nor Durwood. Mr. Durwood Freewheeling. That would be my full name. Mr. Durwood Freewheeling. I like that name.
See, you wanted a nickname, now you got it.
P.S.
Not Scoot, but,
P.S. My ideas aren't good. That's from Bill in Las Vegas.
But your PSs are dynamite.
I don't hate that idea. And in the entry, as an entry into the nickname me, something that is cool, as cool as Scoot, Durwood Freewheeling is, it's not terrible.
There's something there.
Yeah. Dave and Alonzo, thank you for the entertaining show. It is always great fun to laugh and learn, sometimes, while hearing about film. As Andre Bazin said, just kidding. But yeah, I have read many of his books, so I'm a total nerd. Bazin, by the way, we should put that up on the site.
Sure.
So people know, on the Facebook walls, where people know.
What is cinema?
What is cinema? Andre will
tell you.
If you love film, you should go read What Is Cinema. I have it near me frequently. I will read chunks of it just because I want to know more things, or maybe because I didn't get what he was talking about the first time around. I'm going to be knifed. I chose. Whoa. Punctuation, dude. If I am going to be knifed, I chose I would give you the 10 films that I've seen the most and haven't got tired of yet. All right.
Okay.
Here's an alphabetical list. Since I'm a Virgo and too awesome to prank. Oh, astrology.
So
valid.
So unreal about anything. Okay, Alien. We're going to knife you because of astrology, actually, not your movies. Alien scared the life out of me at age 8. Still scary and awesome now.
Okay.
We approve. Blade Runner. Do you have to ask? Yes, I love it. We approve. Double Indemnity. Film noir here. Okay, sure. Fantasia. Oh, Life is Not a Fairy Tale? Fantasia, the Fantasia Barrino story? Because that's a good movie.
I think he means
that. I love the part where she steals the diapers from the 7-Eleven.
While American Idol is on.
While American Idol is on?
Yeah, I think he means the other one.
Oh, okay. Fargo.
The other one with the dancing hippo in it.
That's still a good movie, that other one. Fargo, film about the area I grew up in, went to the local premiere, still love it dozens of times later. Yes?
I do not approve.
No, you're wrong about that.
No, sorry. I think Fargo is contrived. I love Francis McDormand's performance.
Everything you say is incorrect.
But no, I'm not down for that.
You're just making noises.
No, sorry.
The Godfather 1 and 2. Every Easter, my dad would watch this. I've seen it dozens and dozens of times. I love the idea of watching The Godfather's Part 1 and 2 with your dad. Like, hey, Dad, it's Easter. Are we going to watch the Godfather movies?
You bet.
That would be swell.
I remember watching Young Frankenstein with my dad, and he howled with laughter. Yeah. It was great.
Mulholland Drive. I've watched this on Lost Highway many times to read into it. I've written about it. I am mesmerized by the sheer craziness. The Muppet Movie. Yes, I said it, so there it is. Great. You don't even have to say, yes, I said it. The Muppet Movie is fantastic.
We just rewatched it on Blu-ray.
We just watched the Muppet Movie last week at a friend's house. North by Northwest. Yes, this was tough because I like Vertigo and Marnie 2. Pulp Fiction, this film I watched with my family when I was 14. Tarantino in interviews got me to see other films from the 70s. All right, you're going to chop him for Pulp Fiction and for Fargo, and I'm not, so he's still a 90.
Yes.
That's a 90% knife. Honorable mentions, The Big Lebowski, Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Okay, if you like Drop Dead Gorgeous, you have to see Smile.
I know. That's what you say every time someone
brings
up
Drop Dead Gorgeous. I know, but I bring it up because people don't know Smile, and it's a great movie.
Smile is the OG Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Yes.
Yeah. Seven Samurai, Spirited Away, Talk to Her, Unforgiven. Mm. Does he earn back his 10% from some of those? Talk to Her, Spirited Away?
They weren't on the actual 10, so... Yeah.
I try to be clear and leave only one film per director, but sci-fi can really get my interest if it is good. Also, many animation films make it tough for me to pick just one. I could give you a worse list, but let's say that The Tuxedo and Sleepless in Seattle win.
I never saw The Tuxedo.
Keep up the good work and keep letting things get knocked over by the window shade. Bjorn, trapped in Dallas. That's it. That's the letters. We're done. All right.
Well, folks, as always, we thank you for listening. Check out linoleum-knife.com, our spanking new website.
Yes.
You will find things there that you will not find anywhere else. And you will find links to our stuff and show archives and all kinds of goodies.
Yes. All the goodies.
Visit our dear friend at christylemire.com.
Yes.
Check out Matt Atchity and Gray Drake on Rotten Tomatoes Radio on Sirius XM. On Sirius Out Q, check out The Frank DeCaro Show and check out Derek and Romaine.
Please go check out everything.
Yes, we will be appearing, I believe, on Derek and Romaine again soon, I hope. Also, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, again, the new episode of Team Jack is amazing, not just the Avatar stuff, but Jack tells you everything you would ever want to know about what actually happened to Bill Condon's Richard Pryor biopic script. Like, we're talking very inside baseball, behind-the-scenes stuff. It's juicy. Check it out.
Like a wing from Buffalo Wild Wings. While listening to Carly Simon.
That's right.
Juicy.
The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, of course. Love you guys. Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch with our friend James Rocky. You can listen to this program, as mentioned, at linoleum-knife.com. You can subscribe for free at iTunes. And if you would leave us a review there, that would be great. Stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at GetGlue.com. Something occurred to me recently. You know, I used to always complain about GetGlue, how they had us listed as a TV show and not as a podcast.
Yes.
Well, they did a whole overhaul recently, and they basically got rid of everything that wasn't a TV show or a movie.
Did they get rid of us?
No, we're still there.
As a TV show?
Yeah, and all the other podcasts are gone. So we win at Get Glue. Drop us a line.
Because I was really concerned about how much we weren't winning at Get Glue.
If only like we could have been. Stickers. I got to figure that out. Anyway, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And seriously, leave us a review at iTunes.
Tell has friends, that not been happening?
Not much lately. Tell friends.
As the review stream slowed down?
Kind of, yeah.
Look, go to iTunes, leave us a review. Don't leave us a bad one or we'll come find you.
Tell your friends
you'll
about the show.
Seriously, you'll be next. You know what I mean?
Post links about the show on your Facebook, on your Twitter. Let people know. It is because of you guys that anybody's listening. You got other people to find us, so keep that going. We appreciate it. And drop us your 50 words or less essay on why you deserve the awesome wolf mask from Your Next. And have a great week.
You've got your work cut out for you because we have an entry.
That's a haiku.
That is a haiku, and it's amazing. Yeah. So, dude, whoever wrote the haiku, I'm just telling you now, you're the front runner, all right? Totally. So, yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Goodbye.